Welcome to the Drama Teacher Podcast, brought to you by Theater Folk, the Drama Teacher Resource Company. I'm Lindsay Price. Hello. I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. This is episode 191, and you can find any links to this episode in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode191. Okay. Where do you start with a play? How do you come up with a vision? How do you take that vision and turn it into character, or light, or sound, or set, or costuming? How do you execute on your vision if you are one of the hundreds of schools putting on Peter and the Starcatcher this year? Sit back and relax. This podcast is for you. I'm talking to the amazing Carrie Hishon, a Theater Folk blogger extraordinaire, and she's going to talk about her experience directing the show from soup to nuts, which, if Wikipedia is to be believed, is derived from the description of a full dinner from the beginning, soup, to after dessert, nuts. Huh? Not bad, eh? Learned something new today. Also, Wikipedia tells me that a similar Latin phrase is from egg to apple after a typical Roman meal. See, you didn't think you were going to listen in and learn something about words. Have I ever mentioned I love words? Ugh. Enough about me. Okay, let's get to it. Okay, hello everybody, and I am speaking with Carrie Hishon. Hello, Carrie.
Hello.
Now, if you are a regular Theater Folk follower, which you are, of course, Carrie is our blogger with the mostest, our blog queen here at Theater Folk recently, and our blog is, I'm going to say it, it's pretty awesome these days, and it's all thanks to Carrie, so... There you go, Carrie. I'm publicly giving you props.
Amazing. Thank you so much. It's so much fun. I love doing it. And now you can all hear what I sound like, too.
Ooh, now there's a voice. Now there's a voice with the words, which is really funny because I think that the way that you write is very much how you talk. Like I can totally hear your voice when I read your stuff.
It really is. I very much write in my own voice. So it's a lot of stream of consciousness. And then I go back and read it and I'm like, wow, that's a lot of run-on sentences.
I may cut out one or two exclamation points too.
I do that a lot. I write and I talk in exclamation points. That's you know, we all have our crosses to bear.
That's right.
That's mine.
That's right. And if that's yours, too many exclamation points, I think that's a pretty good run.
Yeah, I'll take it.
So we are talking we're doing sort of a production case study again here today. I really enjoy these where we sort of get in depth with someone who has done a show. And this one I know everyone's going to be interested in, and that is Peter and the Starcatcher.
Woohoo!
Woohoo!
Oh my gosh. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
All right, just well, let's get into it. So this is something that I have, it's just been, it is high school, this is the high school show, I think, for going to be for 2017. And I'm really interested to sort of get into your approach and how you and what you did with it. So was it part of that your theater season, or did you have a hand in choosing it? Or did you put your hand up when and said, I would like to direct this?
Yeah, it was a choice of our season. This spring season, to go back for a second, give a bit of context. I work for Original Kids Theatre Company in London, Ontario, which is a youth theatre company with a membership of over 300 kids, and we produce over 20 shows a year. It's absolutely crazy, but it's so much fun, and you get to meet so many amazing kids and work with so many amazing students. So this season, our artistic director decided that he was going to divide up our spring season into four different sections. And in March, our focus was on Peter Pan shows. It was called Journey to Neverland series. And so we did, our March break show was Peter Pan Jr., the Broadway musical. Then our spring intensive for our senior actors, grade 9 to 12, was Peter and the Starcatcher. And then we just closed our production of Peter Wendy, which was for our a play for our intermediate students. So Andrew, our artistic director, selected the shows, and he knows that I am a huge Peter and the Starcatcher fan. I actually use the annotated script book in my first year classes because it has so many wonderful pictures of really animated facial expressions on the actors and wonderful body language. And so I use that as part of my mime and tableau class. So all my first year students have seen my book and hear me talking about it and how excited I get about it. So he did offer it to me. I have a sneaking suspicion he would have liked to direct it himself because he loves that play too, but he was generous enough to give it to me, and I'm very glad he did.
Okay, so before you even started it, you had a love for this show. What is it about Peter and the Starcatcher that catches you?
Oh my gosh, it's based on a book series. So I had read the original book series called Peter and the Starcatchers. So when it came to the off-Broadway and Broadway, they took the S away. And I just loved it so much because it was such a creative and interesting take on the story. And it's a prequel to Peter Pan. And I love Peter Pan as well. I directed Disney's Peter Pan Jr. a few years ago. And so I read the book series by Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson. Loved it. Went to New York on a trip with my husband and a friend, and under the recommendation of a dear friend of mine, went and saw it. She said, "Oh my God, this show, you're going to love it so much. You have to see it." And I did. And I was obsessed with it. What I loved the most about it is how they really created something out of nothing. They took a sort of a poor theater style of theater approach to it. They did the whole show with 12 actors playing multitudes of parts, and having now read the annotated script with all these extra notes about it, discovered that they made the props out of garbage, and they made the proscenium arch out of garbage, and they just used theater so creatively and brought it really back to basics, focusing on storytelling with voice and body, and using like a rope to create a ship, and then waves and doorways, and making it so simple and forcing audiences to use their imaginations. That's what really grabbed me.
And when you talk about it in that way, it's so clear why it's a good show for high schools.
It really is. It's a challenging, for one, because it's got so much text. It's a 2-hour show. It's very text heavy, but they have these wonderful juicy parts that are just so much fun to sink your teeth into, and it could be very, very simple, and it could be very boring, but it's not. It forces the students to really dig deep and to find the funny moments and to get the pacing going where it needs to be, and try on these fun characters. Like I just love them. Like, who doesn't love pirates, really? And you know, all these really just fun, interesting characters that are, you know, it's hard to describe. I'm trying to think of words to describe it here. I'm losing it just because it's so engaging to me. I loved it so much.
Okay, so when you saw it, the whole notion of the imagination and having the audience use their imagination was what clicked with you. That what stayed with you as you started to prepare to direct it? Was there a different vision you wanted to communicate to you, the audience, and to your actors?
Well, I did have to take a bit of a different approach with it, primarily because of the size of my cast. My cast was 26 actors. and when you're doing a show with primarily that was done with 12 actors, you have to get really creative in how you spread the love, so to speak. And also, I knew I didn't have the budget that the Broadway show had, so to create these wonderful sets. So I did approach it in a slightly different way. How I approached this show was kind of the backstory we created was the actor who played Peter. It was set in his basement. The set was designed to look like a basement with, you know, cement floor and unfinished walls and just junk everywhere, old toys, boxes, clothing bits, anything that you could find in an unfinished basement. And that's kind of where we took it from there. And the kind of the backstory was that Peter was moving away and all of his friends were coming over to hang out and play with each other, which was kind of a play within a play style that we were going for. And we were also kind of looking at that point in your life when you're in your teens, your early teens, and you're kind of in that middle stage of still liking little things, like things that you do when you're little, like playing with dolls or playing with G.I. Joes, but you're getting to the point where you know you're a little too old for it, but you still play with it anyway, and you still do it secretly in your basement. So that was kind of the approach we took with it, and that's how we used props. So rather than having a sword fight with swords, we would play with brooms and toilet plungers. And if rather than full-on costumes, the kids wore their own clothes in a neutral palette, and they would grab a hat or a jacket and just throw it on over top. And it was still quite clear who they were trying to portray because of their performances. And that's kind of how we approached it. We wanted to look at the acting challenge of how can we portray these characters without all the excess stuff. So yeah, really focusing on the acting performances.
Yeah. And I think that's really important to state and to hear, particularly when we have so many, there is the little bit of an issue of if someone's doing a Broadway show, that their goal is to replicate it.
Yeah. It's so easy to get into that. It's like, oh, this is how they did it on Broadway, so this is how I must do it.
Yeah, and I really like to hear that. Yes, you were inspired by the production that you saw, but that did not inform. Well, it informed, but it didn't overshadow. There's the word I'm looking for. It didn't overshadow your vision.
Yeah, we definitely were inspired by the Broadway, and I will fully admit that there were a few moments that I remember from the show that we put into our production. For example, when Molly floats, demonstrating her star stuff powers, we did exactly what they did on the Broadway, sure, where she sat on a ladder that had a actually, we used a tree stump underneath and used it like a seesaw, and that's how she floated. But with a little lighting change, it still was pretty awesome. And the thing with Peter and the Starcatcher is that it may have just been where I live in London, but it wasn't a well-known title. Most people didn't know what they were getting into. So even though I had seen the show and I knew what I was expecting, many of our audience didn't. And so they were surprised and pleased with what they saw.
Oh, that's the best reaction you could ever ask for. You know, if somebody goes into something that they don't know what they're getting into, and being pleased. Did your actors know the show?
Most of them did not.
Yeah, well,
it was new to most of them. And when they found out what show they were in, they were kind of like, oh, okay, interesting. The ones that did know the show, though, were over the moon excited because they were like, oh my gosh, this is a real Broadway show. It's a real play that's won Tony Awards and Christian Borle was in it, and this is going to be amazing. So yeah, the ones that did know it were super, super excited, because so often I find youth theater is so focused on musicals. And while this is technically a play with music, it does have a couple songs in it, you know, sometimes the play kids feel overshadowed by the musical kids who are doing the big name shows. You know, they're doing the Music Mans and the Pippins and the Phantoms and all that really famous stuff. So them getting to do a show that was on Broadway, it was very exciting to them.
Well, and then you get into exactly what your focus was, and that is character development and character building and, you know, acting. Not to say, and as I came out of my mouth, I went, no, musical theater is acting. That's not what I mean, but this is different, and I think you're right. It's something that it takes a different tact, and it takes a different approach to preparing a show.
It really does. And actually, it's interesting that you bring that up, because quite a number of my cast members that were in my show this season had only ever done musicals. So doing a play was very much a new tack and a new challenge for them. And I told them right off the bat, first thing is we had a very short rehearsal time. We started rehearsing in January and we performed the week after March break, the week of the 23rd to the 26th of March. So we had, I think, 85 rehearsal hours outside of Tech and Dress. And so I said, number one, we have a very short amount of time to do this show. So we got to work really hard. Number two, so many of you are used to doing musicals that working on a play is going to be a challenge for you. Number three, with my particular production, I decided to have the majority of the cast on stage the whole show.
Yeah.
which is kind of what, again, what the show entails, but we used all the actors for things like walls, and we used them for extra townspeople and pirates and sailors, and they created doorways and all sorts of different ways of using the whole cast on stage for most of the show, which takes a lot of focus and a lot of energy for kids who don't always have a lot of focus. It's hard to stay focused for an hour at a time. And remembering, who am I? What am I doing? What am I supposed to be focusing on at this moment? It took a lot of energy and a lot of focus. And they did brilliantly in that regard.
So this leads to you've got an ensemble that needs to be, put together, and you have to spend a lot of time with your ensemble because we want to make the pictures and the stage pictures very specific, and also you want them to be very focused. And then you also have the lead story that's running through the play. So how did you orchestrate your rehearsals?
That was a challenge for me as a director. Like you said, making the stage pictures work, making sure everyone was included, but also making sure everyone felt important and was being used. So before we got to rehearsals with casting, I had to ensure that everyone had a little special feature. So any of the doubling that was suggested in the show, we took out. So everyone was doing something. All the little bits, there were all one person doing each of those ones. So from there, it was kind of a combination of herding cats and planning out very specifically in advance what I wanted. Because of the limited rehearsal time that we had, I had to have a very clear picture of what I wanted, and being sure to first explain to them what's going on, give them an opportunity to read through it, and also give their input, because I think that's so important for young actors to be able to have their voices heard. Otherwise, they're not really acting. They're just doing what I'm telling them to. They're just, mimicking me, I suppose. And I wanted them to be heard as well and give their own flair to it. But just knowing in advance really where I wanted the scene to go and doing that advanced preparation was really, really important. So every minute of rehearsal was used effectively.
What did you do to keep your ensemble focused, not talking, and while they were on stage? I know that for a lot of teachers, this could be the bane of their existence, is that getting particularly an ensemble to say stay still or to be focused on the scene. What did you do?
Sometimes I succeeded and sometimes I didn't. So there were definitely days where I was pulling my own hair out going, why won't you stop talking? I think that's kind of the nature of theater in a way, just knowing going in that you've got a bunch of students or kids that are really, really excited to be there and excited to see their friends and want to socialize. And then you're telling them to be quiet and focus. So it's kind of an oxymoron that way. It's and I find it kind of amusing. But the first thing was phones had to be away. Absolutely no phones. Giving them a few minutes at the start of rehearsal to get their talking out, and just allowing that 3 minutes for them to talk and hang out and get out what they needed to do. We started with a breakdown of what we were going to achieve that day or what we wanted to achieve that day and our goals for that day, which really helped. And I'd be like, my goal is to get this scene blocked and explain to you, what you're doing in the scene, and your goal is to learn from that, and taking breaks too for your own sanity as well as the kids. I know that's really general, but that's just kind of what we did. trying to think what else really helped. I know explaining to them exactly what they were doing, where their focus was to be, even if it was their eye focus, knowing what am I supposed to be looking at, what should I be thinking about at this point, was really helpful. And one thing we worked a lot on too was actually posture. And this was an interesting thing that I haven't had to work on with a lot of other shows, but because they were doing things like being walls or being doorways and things, I noticed that they were all slouching so much. And that was something that it was so strange to notice. But I was like, okay, what are the properties of a wall? They are sturdy. They are straight. What's their purpose? They hold up your building. So as an actor, being a wall, I have to think of being straight and firm and focused, I guess, but like still. And trusting in that stillness and training my body to not wiggle around, which is the antithesis of what our bodies do. They want to move. They want to breathe. They want to just keep moving. So just figuring out exactly what you're doing. And even if it's something like a wall, what does a wall do? What is the purpose of a wall? Which sounds really funny when I say it out loud, but we worked on that.
Yeah, but sometimes those are the conversations. Well, it's the conversations that you never expect to have. And why would you?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, you know, I don't generally walk around in my day-to-day life thinking, what's it like to be a wall? But there we go.
And there it is. Welcome to theater.
Exactly. But, you know, it makes sense. And I'm sure, and there's tons of plays out there where personification is a big factor of it. So, you know, it makes sense.
Well, and adding on to that, and when because you talked about doing a lot of physicality work, mm-hmm. What kind of exercises did you do with your students to work on having expressive bodies?
Yeah. Oh, I love physicality so much. That's one of my favorite things. I think part of it is just because I do stage combat so often. That's one of the reasons why I love physicality. One exercise I do a lot with my students, because I use this myself as an actor when I'm doing shows, is I think of an animal that my character is similar to. And then from there, using mannerisms of an animal as a person, that helps me figure out how does my character move, how do they look around, how do they speak. So thinking specifically about the characters of Peter and Prentice and Ted, those are the three orphan boys in the show. And we were focusing on the scene where they're introduced and they're down in a bilge dungeon. So they're in this really small cramped area in the brig of a ship. And they're in the dark and they're scared. So we looked at Peter, who at this point in the show is called Boy, and he doesn't have a name. Nobody loves him. He has no friends. He's very feral. And so we looked at him kind of like almost like a feral wolf cub. And if he was spooked, he'd run away and he'd stare at you with these really, really intense eyes. Whereas Prentice, who is an orphan boy who claims to be a leader. He always wants to be a leader. He always is very proud and boastful. We thought about him. He's more like a cat. And he kind of slinks into conversations, and he puffs up when he gets mad, and he just kind of shoves himself in there. And when he's upset, he walks away. Whereas Teddy, who is the youngest orphan, and he's obsessed with food, and he's just so adorable and just wants to be loved. He was clearly a brand new puppy. He just wanted to be loved. He wanted to be cuddled. He'd come up to you with these sad puppy eyes he always looked like he wanted to be touched and loved and held. And so that's kind of where we started there, because animals are something that you can really grasp onto, you know, kids, students, anyone, actors, myself. You can look at an animal and see how it moves and see how it interacts with other animals and people. So using that as a starting point for figuring out your physicality really works for me. And I found that works for my students. I think just because it works so well for me, I can explain it a little better.
Well, that's always good, eh? When you know you've got something that you can fully explain. There's so many things I talk and I'm like, does that make sense? I don't know. I'm not sure it does.
Well, and then I get down there right there with them too. And I will walk around on the floor with them and roll around and crawl and just get down on the floor and get there with them, because I think that helps too, is if they see their directors willing to try different things and experiment with different movements and physicalities and ways of speaking, you know, it kind of gets them out of their shells and helps them from feeling silly trying something like, okay, you're going to say your line, but you're going to growl it like a wolf cub. Okay, sure. But now Carrie will also do it with you, so we don't feel so silly.
Well, that's part of it, eh? Because particularly with physicality and with teens, it's like it's hard to get them out of their bodies and mm-hmm. and away from themselves. And it's that looking silly. That is a heavy weight that they carry around with them.
It really is, yeah. They always want to look cool. And particularly girls always want to look pretty. They don't want to be ugly. They don't want to be weird. And I know I'm throwing a gross generalization over teens and kids in general, and I'm sorry because they're wonderful, but it's just kind of part of the growing up, you know, figuring out who you are and wanting to fit in and look cool.
So that's why we should be the ones who are crawling around on the floor growing like wolf cubs. We have to be the silly ones. What was the most challenging part of Peter and the Starcatcher for you?
I think the first most challenging thing was initially figuring out how I was going to serve 26 actors in a show written for 12 actors. Initially that was the biggest challenge. And with that, I just kind of started with the script, went through the script. Anytime it said narrator Stash or narrator Peter or narrator Molly, took a white out to that, all that went. So all the narrator lines got split up. So in the end, all 26 of them got speaking lines, which was pretty cool, and a feature somehow. I think the second challenge for me was, again, getting the buy-in from students who weren't necessarily interested in doing a play, because they were used to doing musicals. And that was a challenge, just to try and, again, get them to understand the value of what they were working on and the benefits to them, because that's a big thing, you know, what's in it for them? What are they going to learn from this? So I tried to really express how excited I was about the show and how passionate I was about the show and talk about what are the benefits. You're going to work on your acting skills. You're going to meet new people. You're going to work on this Tony Award winning play, and you're going to have a new experience doing something that you're not used to. I think those are all really fantastic benefits of doing a show of this nature. So I think that was probably my second biggest challenge working on this show.
But it sounds like it all worked out in the end, right? Like that. Sometimes English is not my first language. Okay. It's just like, so, all right. And then how did you grow as a director doing this show?
I grow with every show I work on. Really. This is my 13th show working with this particular theater company. And this show just challenged me so much as a director. Both relating to students who I hadn't necessarily worked with before and getting to know them and how they work and what they were expecting out of a show. It challenged me artistically to, you know, be able to serve the actors, be able to serve the story, help them to understand what they were doing and present it in a way that made sense. And also to get my passion for the show and my excitement for the show to my kids and to explain it in a way that they can understand and make those connections with them. Like, there's a scene in the show where a bird comes on stage, and spoiler alert, if anybody doesn't know Peter and the Starcatcher, this is your spoiler alert. This bird eventually turns into Tinkerbell. And we were about 2/3 of the way through the process, and one of my actors came up to me and said, what's the deal with the bird? And I'm like, what? Like, it's Tinkerbell. How do you not know this? But, you know, I have to remember that not everybody has read Peter Pan or is familiar with Peter Pan, despite the fact that we think it's so universal. Not everybody knows it. And no, not everyone is as close to the subject matter as I am, because I read the book frequently and I've seen the show and I watch the YouTube videos. Just because it's special to me doesn't mean it's special to everyone. So it was my job to present that and help my kids present that to audiences, and especially audiences who also, like I said in the before, didn't know what it was, having to get that story out so people were excited about the show and would come see it. And the cool thing was is that people actually came and saw it more than once. So that's awesome too.
I think that's I think you make a really excellent point that sometimes, and I'm totally, this happens to me all the time too. I think everybody is in love with theater as much as I am. And I think everybody knows, has the same level of knowledge of things that I have. And then when you're, you know, working with a show that has a very specific world, particularly as a director, you before the show start, before you have your auditions, you've immersed yourself in the world. Mm-hmm. And that means you're ahead of your students. And it's just because you know the whole thing and you love it doesn't mean that to pay attention and to actually spend time getting buy-in and explaining and communicating.
It's so true. And this show in particular really opened my eyes to that. You know, doing a show that's, again, I think everybody knows it. I saw it. Why doesn't everybody else know this brilliant play? You know, you're missing out on this. But I have to check my own ego and bring it back a few steps and be like, okay, let's go back to basics. Let's talk about the story, figure out the story. Because that's essentially what theater is. You are telling a story. And if it's not clear, your audience is going to go to sleep or they're going to leave.
Absolutely. All right, wrapping up, what's the one piece of advice you would give to another director who is directing Peter and the Starcatcher with high school students?
I think with this show in particular, it's so easy to get caught up in the craziness and the story and the text. And what really worked well for this show, you know, taking away your concept, taking away all that stuff, focus on the basics. Focus on the basics. Focus on diction, enunciation, volume, knowing your characters. What are you doing? Why are you doing it? Why am I here in this scene? And knowing that every single step of the way, your actors will be able to, you know, convey the story the way it's meant to be told. Because it is a fast-paced show. The jokes come by like crazy. They just fly by you. And in order to keep it funny and to keep it moving forward, you have to focus on that, on the simple stuff, which isn't always so simple.
Excellent. Well, the time has just flown by here. Thank you so much, Carrie, for talking to me.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Carrie. Before we go, let's do some Theater Folk news. Any links to today's episode can be found in the show notes at theaterfolk.com/episode191. So, I gotta say, not only is Carrie a great director, a wonderful blogger, she has a fantastic course in our Drama Teacher Academy on theater etiquette. So when you're teaching students who are brand new to theater, it's important to discuss and apply the expectations not only of the drama classroom, but also the theatrical world. In this course, she starts right at the beginning with what is theater etiquette and moves through every step in the production process from audition to post-show recovery. Nuts. So every module has tips for both you and your students, classroom exercises, rehearsal exercises, and reflections. There's posters that you can print in your classroom and also backstage. So I love this course, and you can learn more about the DTA at dramateacheracademy.com, that's all one word, or in the show notes at theaterfolk.com/episode191. Where can you find this podcast? I know, it's a burning question. But let me tell you, we post new episodes every second Tuesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk and on the Stitcher app. You can also subscribe to the Drama Teacher Podcast on iTunes. Just search for the word Theater Folk. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.